Hello, welcome to Kitchen Curiosity, the podcast where we delve into people, ideas and innovations shaping the global food service and hospitality equipment industry. I'm your host, Radford Chancellor. And today we've got a double act, if you like, a fantastic couple of guests with me in the studio here in Canary Wharf. But before we get going, I just want to say thank you to our sponsors, Zest Food Service Solutions and Envirocool, for sponsoring this podcast. We're going to be talking to both these gentlemen about their products, innovations, and some new bits of kit that are coming on the market. So first of all, I'm going to sit down with Zest director, Chris Bing. And then I'm going to be sitting down with Paul Harper, who's an old friend of mine. He's come all the way from Australia, not just to see us, but he's here on business. So let's get on with it anyway. So my first guest today knows pretty much everything you need to know about catering equipment industry inside out, I think. He is the Managing Director of Zest Food Service Solutions, Chris Bing. He's also one of our sponsors. And Chris, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alfred. Yeah, all good. Yeah, very good.
So, I mean, normally what I like to do is before we just sort of get into like your business and what you do as a biz, as a company, just for the listeners, can you take us a little bit like about you, maybe just go back to like where were you brought up and school and then all of that?
Yeah, sure. So I was brought up in Guildford in Surrey.
Oh wow.
Yeah,
that's where I live.
Do you live there now? Wow.
I didn't know that.
That was my hometown. Born and bred in Guildford.
Wow. And you're not there anymore?
No, now I live in Bedfordshire.
Oh okay, right.
Yeah. via Guernsey in the Channel Islands.
Oh okay.
So yeah, I born and bred in Guildford, educated there, and then my love of food came along and I went to Guildford College of Technology to do all my catering qualifications.
Okay.
Which was a fantastic experience. They just opened their new facility at the time, so they have a really expanded facility there. And then I went on to sort of live a career as a chef in a few various places, nowhere at the top of the ladder, but some nice places. And that culminated in me moving over to Guernsey in the Channel Islands for 8 years.
Okay, chefing,
which was fantastic. Oh. So much fresh seafood and a really nice environment. But you wanted to come back to the UK at times because you felt so insular there. But it is a beautiful island.
Yeah, and I imagine it's great in the summer, but probably harder in the winter.
Yeah, it doesn't get so cold as it does here, but it's very wet and windy. But there's always a beach that's sheltered from the wind. Yeah. And there's always a sunny side of the island, so to speak. So it's, it's a fantastic place to live. So I did 8 years over there.
Okay.
Yeah, and then come back to the UK and finished my chef career and did a little bit of training and development for a while and went on to sort of teach MVQs and support younger people into the industry for a while, which was good.
Okay.
Before I then got into sales.
Right, okay. And what was your first job in sales?
Working selling the Thermaline product.
Oh, was it?
Yeah,
oh, right. So you've gone from, you've been with the Advance Group really and then you're now heading up.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And then a little while out during the COVID times and then went and worked for Gamble Food Service and working with Hatco products and things like that.
So how long you've been in the food service equipment sector?
Since 2013, so that'd be 12 years.
So 12, yeah.
Yeah.
So reasonably new in this room.
Yeah.
So we've got a professor of food service with us today. So, but you also, you're part of the Burnt Chef project, you're a mental first aider. What got you into that? Why is that important?
I'll tell you what, it's from when I, obviously having been a chef myself and lived the experience of how tough the hospitality environment can be on that side of things, and got introduced to Chris Hall, the founder and now the global president, I think is his title, of the Burnt Chef Project. I was so inspired by his vision for how the industry can be supported, and then understood how I could get involved with the Ambassador Project and to get on board as an ambassador. And it's just a fantastic thing to be able to, in your day-to-day, just spreading the word about mental health.
Yeah.
And the example I always use is if I walked in today and met you and I had a patch over one of my eyes or I was walking with a limp, I'm sure you'd have said, "Hey, all right, Chris, what's happened?
Yeah.
You know, have you done something to your leg or have you done something to your eye?" But when it comes to people's mental health, you know, it's inside. People don't see it. So it's that, are you okay? You know, it's double checking with people and making sure they're okay. And just having the conversations that over the years have been tough conversations. You know, we all probably come from families where dad, granddad, come on, stiff upper lip, you know, boys don't cry, all this sort of stuff. But in this industry and in life in general, especially with young men, you know, the suicide rate and and the mental health problems that come with hospitality, especially long hours, poor conditions. It's big. So if I can give anything back to the industry that I'm now a supplier to, then and that I love, by being able to open up those conversations, it's great. And
even the elephant within our own industry, the food service equipment industry, we've seen a number of guys take their own lives.
Absolutely,
you know, mainly men. I think there's a couple of women, but mainly men.
Yeah, it's a big thing. It's a big thing.
So a great thing you're doing, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny that the Burnt Chef Project's sort of mascot is that elephant. I'm sure if you've been to any of the shows or any place, it's the elephant in the room, a massive big blow up sort of elephant there to have that conversation opener.
Yeah,
and it can be anywhere. You know, I was wearing a wristband and I met someone at a water bottle, and I met someone at Blackfriars Station one day, and he was a chef and he spotted it and he was having a really bad day. So I had a conversation with him, just sat down, the trains were delayed, and he was like, I understand what that is, tell me a bit more about it. And that was just a random conversation on a station platform. It's those sort of conversations that I don't know what was going on in his life at that time, and I don't know what was going on in his life afterwards, but just taking a few minutes to chat to somebody.
Well, it can change people's day, can't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
Just even smiling at them more. Totally. Good work. Let's talk about kitchens and Zest Food Service Solutions. So your company tagline is inspired by your kitchens, perfect by Zest.
Yep.
You've got quite a specific portfolio of products. They're quite unique, really, in the market. Things like Thermodyne, what we can talk about today, VTEC, and other products. So do you want to talk about your business and what products you've got and what's behind it, really?
Yeah, sure. It's Thermodyne has been a partner of the business for many years, and it's around finding those excellent solutions that are going to really add value to a kitchen. Sometimes they're new, sometimes they're innovative, sometimes they're a bit disruptive, and it takes a while for people to understand what they do. But we're trying to stay away from a lot of the commodity products and to find something that's a little bit different, a little bit special, potentially with sustainability credentials or with energy efficiency, not needing extraction, simple plug and play, things that can really add value to a kitchen operation that might be different to the norm.
Okay. All right. And the brand, specific brands are?
So we've got VTEX, which we're talking about today. Another product I want to talk about a bit in shortly, which is a new product called Suji. We then have Gem Refrigeration.
Yeah.
And a lot of that comes with some specialist wine refrigeration, some meat aging refrigeration, and chocolate ice cream patisserie refrigeration.
Okay, yeah.
Great range of blast chillers. We also look after Staginello in the UK, which is meat, fish, and charcuterie aging cabinets.
Right, okay.
We've recently taken on the license to support the Hotmix product in the UK, which is a specialist thermal processor, and they also have an ice cream processing machine.
Okay.
Krupp's dishwashers. Again, we're one of the partners in the UK for Krupp's dishwashers, and again they've got a very good new range of sort of high tech dishwashers that can add great value to a kitchen.
Okay.
As another option.
So some quite specialist products and for different uses, different.
That's right. And Thermodyne, obviously.
Thermodyne, of course, which is quite a long standing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Long standing product, which we see a lot of it around. So let's talk about the new product. Is it Suji?
Suji, yes. Suji.
Which is a first, really. I mean, you told me a little bit on the phone when we chatted, but it sounds like every commercial kitchen can do with it. But tell me about what is it?
100%. It's so different, and it's effectively an oil recycling solution where you literally change your dirty cooking oil into a high-grade cleaning product in 6 minutes.
Okay, right. So you take your dirty cooking oil.
Yes.
And you turn it into a cleaning product.
In 6 minutes.
How?
So there's a box.
That's mad.
Yeah, it's mad. And it's that mad that the inventor who we created a relationship with when he was going through the prototype and how we've come on board as the UK partners. When you press the button on the machine, it says, let the magic begin. So they've even got that little tagline in there. It's so a box on the wall that you put in your cleaning cupboard or your janitorial area, little connection to water, 13-amp plug and play, very simple.
Mm-hmm.
The recognisable blue oil container that a lot of oil goes back into.
Yeah.
You pour your dirty oil through a small filter into that. Then you connect an enzyme, and the enzymes vary to the product you want to create.
Okay.
And you press the button.
Right.
And in the machine, it creates this chemical solution for you, your cleaning chemical solution, and out it comes into another container.
Okay.
at the moment there is multi-surface cleaner, floor cleaner, laundry detergent, carpet cleaner, manual washing up liquid, and automatic dishwasher liquid.
Wow.
And if you think, you could be cooking fish and chips at lunchtime, you could cool the oil down, you could drain it, and you could wash your clothes in the evening. That's mind-blowing.
That is mind-blowing.
But when you think of every every kitchen has cooking oil.
Yeah.
They all have different, you know, they have, sometimes you have rogue traders that come to try and claim they're collecting it from a reputable business. Mm. Sometimes, you know, compounds outside businesses get stolen and the oil gets broken into and stolen. Businesses, you know, some they sell back to their current supplier and get a small discount off of their oil. Mm-hmm. And what we're not trying to do here is to take all of that. Because if you have 60 litres of oil a week...
That'd be a lot of chemicals.
You can't make that much chemical. Yeah. But what I'm saying is if you have a relationship with your manufacturer or your supplier of your clean oil and you only send him back 55 litres 1 week and you keep 5 to make all the cleaning chemicals you need for your business, you're still getting your discount off your oil.
Yeah.
And now you're not needing to buy those cleaning chemicals.
Yeah, yeah, of course. So you just filter the oil a little bit and then put it into this machine. I'm just like trying to visualize this. So
yeah, it basically mixes a blend of the dirty oil, the enzyme you have to purchase, but
of course
the other thing that happens here is the concentrate that comes out, and when you dilute it down into the relevant parts per 100 for the relevant processes and things you want to clean,
yes,
the final product is still significantly cheaper than what your cleaner company you're buying.
Okay.
Because you're using part of the ingredients is your dirty oil.
Yeah, of course.
So the machine mixes the dirty oil with an enzyme and some fresh water, blends it together, and out it comes.
And how long have you been representing or looking after this product?
It's brand new.
Okay.
So the license is signed this year. We're just launching it now.
Right, okay.
Got a few trial sites coming up.
And how's that feedback been?
Yeah, exciting.
Yeah.
You know, it's exciting. It's like, you know, we're going to talk about VTEX as well today. It's not like selling one oven to another oven. People know how an oven works, or selling one fridge to another fridge. People know how a fridge works. You don't need to educate them.
No.
You just have to have a commercial proposal that beats the competitor.
Yeah.
And then hopefully you can go on and sell lots of that product. With this, it's a completely new idea.
Okay.
And like a lot of innovation that we'll probably talk about a bit more today, it's making people understand you don't always have to do it the way you've always done it.
Yeah, I could think of a lot of organisations in London that would, well, like the UK, that would really love that product,
yeah.
Especially other, sort of the, you know, the B Corps and the environmentally friendly and all of that. It's a real, yeah.
Yeah, wow. It's obviously got the money saving, you know, using a product you've already got. It's obviously got all of the ESG and the sort of sustainability sort of things going for it. So, yeah, it's disruptive, and it's gonna make waves in the industry, I think, and hopefully we get a lot of people on board with it because it's fantastic.
Yeah. Okay. So, kind of staying on that theme, because that's kind of like it's an environmental friendly product as well, isn't it? In that way, I suppose. Because you sell many food distributors, I think.
Yeah.
Predominantly,
it's about getting it specified with people,
and
wherever that specifier has their route to market, we will support them. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you find when you work with distributors, you know, are they genuinely looking for green, sustainable solutions, or are they still focusing on the price tag, or is it different horses for different courses?
Yeah, I think, you know, it filters back down to the end user and the different stakeholders within the end user business.
Okay.
And I still feel, and this is a shame in some ways in our industry and in others, that the sustainable product or the more operational excellence product quite often comes with a slightly different price tag, and therefore it's satisfying the stakeholders in all parts of the business.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to do the right thing. Everyone on their CSR policies, on their websites and things, wants to do the right thing. But sometimes it comes down to the numbers.
Yeah.
And it's trying to get people to change that mindset. And again, with the VTEX product we're going to talk about now, it isn't always more expensive.
Hmm.
And actually, there's savings to be made in other areas of the business by adopting some of these products.
Yes.
But it's changing the mindset.
Of course, yeah, and building the story and the case, the business case.
Yeah, absolutely,
if you like.
And the stubbornness in you know, and again, having been a chef myself, there's, you know, thinking...
So it's more, not so much a distribution channel, it's more it comes down to the end customer, what they're driving.
I think every consultant and every distributor in the UK is probably having the same challenges, where they know there's a really great solution, but it's trying to get the end user operator or the QS or the project team on whether they're building a new business or doing a replacement to really adopt that new technology.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a fair point. Definitely. So, I mean, with equipment, it's only as good as the support, really. So how does Zest approach things like demonstrations, installation, training, after sales? You know, what's your take on that?
It's really important. And, you know, we're really keen to support people from the beginning all the way to the end. And again, selecting our partners and selecting our manufacturers, like we're here today with Paul, is about having that really joined up approach all the way from the factory to the installation. And we're always open to pass over any information required, you know, do demonstrations, go out and do training. The after sales is really important, and to make sure that we've got the parts required, the servicing manuals, you know, the engineer training, so that any service call can be fixed as quickly as possible with a first time fix.
Yeah.
You know, and with the sort of thing we've done with VTEX, for example, their tech support team have got a fantastic manual of, you know, right down to the 17th, how long something should take to be fixed, what the part is. And to have that sort of partnership and have the manufacturers with that sort of knowledge really helps the engineers that are going out to the customers.
And looking at your business, I mean, Zest is reasonably young name in the market. I know you're backed by a team with over 40 years' experience, a big group, a well-known established group. What's the kind of ambition? What do you want from Zest, really, over the next few years?
I think it's to continue with developing and working with our partners on these innovative products.
Okay.
To build the awareness of the brand that it's at the forefront of people's minds when it comes to an innovative solution in their kitchen. And, you know, with a couple of these products we've got, or nearly all the products we've got, there's some real scope to really make a difference.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're looking to do in the next few years.
I think it's a good idea, and it's a good concept, because obviously your experience in developing, checking, monitoring new brands before you launch them out in market, so people got some confidence, really, that it does what it says on the tin, I suppose.
It's about picking the right partners and picking the right equipment. You know, there's so many ideas and innovations out there in the world, and there you get people messaging you quite often through social network and things with a new idea. But it is about having a brand that fits with our target market, some of the sectors we look after, some of the customers that we're looking, you know, that we're looking to support. It's about the reliability and scalability. It's about the support from factory, as I said, all the way to the end user.
Mm-hmm.
About the right commercial partnership, obviously, because businesses have to survive and make money.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's about picking those right partners, really.
Okay. Well, Chris, it's been great talking to you and also hearing about the UK market and your business that you represent. If you don't mind sticking around,
sure.
I'm going to invite Paul into the studio and obviously catch up with him. And then we're also going to invite you to come back for the group chat. We'll talk a bit more as well about VTEC that we'll talk about today.
Sure.
So thanks.
Thank you.
So my second guest today is someone I've known for quite a long time, going right back to his days in the UK. I'm especially pleased to say he's sat here with me in the studio right across the desk from me, all the way from Australia. So it feels like a proper reunion, but more than just an interview, to be honest. Paul Harper has spent over 35 years in global food service equipment. He launched various different brands, represented Turbo Chef, also Auto Sham, and I think as well a Dandy. So very experienced gentleman in our sector. But today he's here to talk to us about VTEC, and obviously we're going to catch up with him as well. So let's get on with it. Paul, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm really well, Radford, and I'm all the better for coming to see you guys.
Oh, the good. Well, yeah, it's been a long time, because I think it must go back to the Turbo Chef days.
Yeah, I think it does. I think,
26 years
probably. Yes, 26.
It's
age now. Yeah, I know. So, that's what I'm worried about.
yeah. Well, exactly. Well, the other day I was called old on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
But anyway, we won't go down that road.
Yeah.
So, again, talk me through a little bit about you know, younger Paul, where you went to school, you know, a little bit, and then when you obviously moved over to Australia.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm, as you'll get from the accent, I've not lost it. I've not got the Aussie accent. I've got haven't. Little twangs in there yeah, every now yeah. and again. But no, I'm a Somerset born and bred, a little place between Bristol and Bath called Keynsham. So for those of a certain age, they'll know that's Horace Batchelor country, and I'll let them do the Google search on that one. But right. he's the famous guy that brought Keynsham into the world, I suppose. And very similar to Chris, I loved food, you know, and I thought, what am I going to do with my life? So for me, it was an early day of you know, classically training as a chef.
All right, okay.
So, you know, I've been that side of the
defense,
bench,
if you like.
Yeah. And you know, I quickly decided that although I went through various parts of the industry from a food perspective, that is probably what wasn't what I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And like everything, you fall into different things. And I got involved into a company which I started, actually started a drinks company in the UK called Noisy Drinks many years ago.
Okay.
And that's really what got me into my equipment side, which then got me into the ice cream, a single serve product that I worked on with ServEquip.
Okay.
And just happened to fall over this thing called Turbo Chef that ServEquip had at the time.
Yeah.
I loved the product, and because I could cook.
Yeah.
It was one of those ones I just thought, this is fantastic. And whilst at the time they were rolling out into places like Subway, which was an easy roll, I was looking at other things. And in London at that time, I was coming in, and I think it was a coffee chain called Coffee Republic. And
yeah.
I haven't been here for years, so it's understand whether that's still around or not. But I managed to put a number of those ovens into that group, and then the president of Turbo Chef came over and said, who's the guy that's done all of this outside of Subway? And it was like fingers got pointed to me over in the corner where I was busy doing other things, and basically they sort of came and pinched me and said, would you do something in the UK for us, set it up? And I started working with another gentleman in the UK as well, and we launched Turbo Chef UK, which supported a number of different things. But that really got me. That was my first step to go down to Australia, because the opportunity came when Subway were launching in Australia. And Paul Lear at the time, who was the president of the company, said, look, you know, Will, we'd like someone down in Australia to start them off, but we don't want anybody to live there, but would you go down? And of course, yeah, of course I can.
Yeah.
That was a hard job. That was a hard ask. So so I went down and, you know, and met some of the industry people down there that set us off, who are now, you know, long-term business friends, people that, you know, trusted people that, you know, I've known for years now. And that was sort of my journey on that side. And then, obviously, Turbo Chef got bought out by Middleby wanted me in a corporate group. And then the call came, we'd like someone down in Australia all of the time. So that became a bit of a family decision. It wasn't a difficult one for my wife at the time, because she always wanted to go down. So that's what we did. So we got down to Australia, and then my other roles within other companies
You have children to move as well? Or?
Yes. We had one. Okay. So the thing for me was, well, Amy, my daughter, was at an age where she was just about to go to secondary school, and I just wanted that 4 or 5 year solid gap. We said, oh, we'll be there for 4 or 5 years, then we'll come back.
Yeah.
And of course, 16, 17 years later, I'm still there.
Yeah,
so that sort of tells you one thing.
You're in Brisbane?
Yes. Yeah, so I'm on the East Coast, so subtropical. So I always thought that I might struggle with the heat, but it's a thing that I love now.
So
coming over here and bringing a bit of Aussie weather with me has been quite good.
But
it's lovely, you know. And if you know, we know it's going to be hot, so we're prepared for it. So it's always a lot easier, you know. It's you know, they say whinging palms, but at the end of the day, it's, you know, here is not geared up for this weather.
Yeah, we're
all
not
the
used
time.
To it. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
And it's no different than we're not geared up for the cold weather.
We're going to have to probably start gearing up.
Absolutely.
So. Okay, so sort of fast forward now in your current role, EnviroCool.
Yes.
Tell me a bit about that. What is that? What products do you have? And, you know, what was the... Yeah.
So the sort of story is, I suppose, that I was, again, probably a show, I had a couple of investors come up to me and tap me on the shoulder and said, we've been told to come and speak to you. And I said, oh, right, okay. And then long story short, basically, they explained the product. I thought, that's quite smart. I like that. It took a while, a little bit of convincing, because I had some really enjoyable years with AutoSham.
Yeah.
I did some, I felt that I've left a legacy with the company, still communicate with them. It's a good brand. I don't think anybody I've worked with previously, I would say everything that I've got previously has been good. But I think AutoSham, it was a really difficult decision. And I made it. I think you get one chance in life. Why not experience as much as you can? And for me, I thought I could make a difference. I thought I had enough knowledge from my previous times with previous companies to be able to give them an opportunity to make the product and launch it to the extent that it deserved. A lot of people are putting a lot of money into this.
Right.
And that money is hard-earned money. So the way I see it, it's a respect for that. And it deserves some sound bites in our marketplace because it's an excellent product. So the technology, it's all built around the need to look at refrigeration differently. It creates some of the most, uses the most energy. It's not as efficient when you look at the technology we're actually deploying. And I think, as a whole, that's really what brought me in. I could see where it could be applied.
Okay.
And it's about building networks. We have a strategy which basically, from a global perspective, it's designed to be a distribution model like Zest. We find good partners that understand what you could class as disruptive, technically advanced products that people haven't seen.
Yes.
So you're trying to take those early adopters. And you'll always have in every industry, whether it's equipment, food service, restaurants, doesn't matter how you look at it, you'll always have those that are the innovators. And then you're going to get those that are replicators. So the innovators will get there first. The replicators will sit back and have a look at all of this. Is it going to work? And then decide, it's actually working. We better jump on. And that's it's a little bit like TurboChef. I can remember going back in the day saying to people, this will be its own sector. It'll be accelerated cook platforms, ventless technology, it will be its own sector. And look at it today. There's
massive.
Hundreds of different manufacturers from
copying it.
That copy it. And that's an endorsement that the technology is right and it works.
Yeah.
So when you're being copied, you're doing something right. It's not always good for the inventor, but ultimately there's enough space out there.
So within Viracool, you got the VTEC product. Is there another product, or is it just
it took sort of 5 to 10 years to really hone in on what the product we've got today is going to look like.
Okay.
And I suppose it's really been over in the last 12 months. We've gone from, a Mark 1 model to a Mark 2 model. Mark 1 is almost beta, not quite, but it needed some industry time so the industry could feedback and say, this is great, or this is great, but we like this, this, and this.
Yeah, of course.
And then we've sort of transitioned, which we did. I joined last June. And we transitioned to launch the Mark II standalone VTEX product at Host.
Okay.
On the FCSI stand. It was a fantastic event. And we got some really good contact. People could see that.
For kind of the listeners, just explain, what is this VTEX product? What does it do?
Okay. So VTEX is designed to chill a packaged drink.
Okay.
And we say from 60 seconds onwards. And that's really depending on what you're putting in. So from a can of Coke, a can of beer, to a bottle of beer, a bottle of water, to a bottle of wine or a bottle of champagne, and even a Magnum now with the Mark II. So we've got the ability to put a fairly large bottle
rapid
in
cooling.
So taking something from an ambient temperature, so that ambient could be 20, 25 degrees, and then we're bringing it down to a cool serve temperature.
Yeah, really quick.
Yeah, really quick. So from 60 second upwards, so if you took an aluminium can of Coke or something, we can basically chill 8 cans in 60 seconds.
Okay.
Shouldn't be long before we can double that. The unit will be able to cope with it, but at this moment in time is 8 cans, which if you take it by the hour and a bit of unloading and loading, it's about 450 cans every hour. With a bottle of wine, 75 cl bottle, it's about 40 bottles an hour. So when you look at where can this go? How can it fit into our environment? It starts to get you to think about your refrigeration that's currently that you're currently using, because there's lots of pushbacks. You'll go in, and I'm learning all of those, and people will come in and say, I've got refrigeration, why do I need this?
Mm.
And it's like, there's a number of different reasons. You've got the ability to use your refrigeration. We're not saying take your refrigeration away and waste that capital you spent on it, but there may be different ways that you can run your operation, especially in restaurants where you've got some more faster moving products, put them in a fridge, take the slower ones out and put more faster moving in your fridge. So that's one help.
Yeah.
Take your slower ones out, but your slower ones might be your bottles of wine, but we only serve 6 bottles of wine because haven't got enough storage capacity to do any more. And I say to people, you know, if you've got 6 bottles of white wine on your menu, you're going to have 6 behind it stock. So that's 36 bottles.
Yeah.
You know, if we go on a night and we all like drinking Chardonnay or something like that, you know, you can very quickly run out, and then you can't wait 90 minutes until you serve the next one.
Yeah, of course.
There's disappointment. Oh, you got no more Chardonnay, or is it warm?
Yeah.
So it's that bit's tough. So for us, we can take it out and we can say, you're never going to run out of a chilled bottle of anything, because even the stuff that's in the fridge, if you've, you know, got a rugby group coming in, they all like a particular type of cider or whatever, and they drink you out, you can start putting it back chilled.
Yeah.
8 at a time.
Yeah.
If it's wine, then you can turn around and say, well, you don't need 36 now. You can actually have 36 different types, or 18 different types, have one behind. Every time you take one out of the fridge, or you take one, you replace one.
Yes.
Or you just chill as you need it.
Yeah.
So there's a number of different ways for established restaurants. In the design side of things, when you're looking at new builds and greenfield sites, that's when it becomes even more exciting as well. And obviously, this is not just a product for a restaurant. It's products for retailers, supermarkets, convenience stores.
I want one at home.
Well, we'll get onto that one later on, because that's when you say what's in the range. The range is Mark II. It's the multi-drink VTEX unit. We have got I'm going to use a new word for you. You know, people come up with these new words every now and again, and I've used it a few times. Resmercial.
What's over?
Resmercial.
Resmercial. Okay,
put that one on your card. So this is about taking something that could be residential, but it was also commercial. Our industry or residential loves this crossover between, I've got something that's in a proper kitchen, you know, that I've got it at home. Everybody said, I'll have one of those at home. So what you're ending up with is you've got this commercial product that's really for the home as well.
Yeah.
So we will have, within the next 18 months, something that we'll put into the market that will be more tabletop standalone, using the same technology.
Okay.
So this will be like an air fryer sized product that on the Friday afternoon you go home, and especially days like today when it's warm, and you get in, you open your fridge, there's nothing in there. We're going to put a bottle of wine in, we haven't in the fridge. That's not a problem. I'll put it in one of my new little tabletop VTEXs. I'll put it in 4 minutes later. I've got a nice chilled bottle of wine. So you're never going to run out of a chilled wine at home. So if you think of the logic of what air fryers have done for the home industry, we've all got ovens. We've probably got 3 ovens. We've got a microwave, we've got probably a heating oven and a roasting oven. Now we got an air fryer.
Yeah.
What we're saying and where we're looking is you've got a fridge. Some people have got a wine fridge.
If you're lucky.
Yeah, if you're lucky. And now you can just have one of these in the corner, quietly away.
Yeah.
Just sits there quietly.
The thing as well is now there's just not enough space in the fridge.
Correct. Yeah,
like, you know, I put a bottle in, it keeps getting taken out, put back on the rack, and it's like, oh,
and we've all done it. We all bring our bottles home and think, oh yeah, stick it in the freezer. It still takes time.
Yeah, yeah.
3 minutes, 4 minutes in this, and cans of beer. It doesn't have to be just wine.
Yeah.
Cans will do in 30 seconds, 60 seconds. Sorry.
So you wrote an interesting post recently about sort of scaling a product from 0 to 5,000 units. And you mentioned that people love the destination, but they ignore the journey. And that's what execution that creates success. So what's the biggest hurdles, do you think, about a disruptive technology like VTEX and getting the market to adopt it?
I think you have to understand the journey. And the piece I wrote... I wrote it for a reason. The individual will know why I wrote it for a reason. Okay. I won't mention it, but yeah. it was a good launch pad in respect that every product, and one of our owners will also understand this, because he actually raised it the other day, every product needs a runway. Look at it as an airport and in airplanes.
Yeah.
We put the airplane on the runway, which is our product. Now we need to take, we've built the plane. Now we're driving it, taxiing it out and putting it on the runway. The hardest thing possible is then to get it off of the ground. And that's, you know, any product, including VTECs. So at the moment, the best way I could describe it is we're going down the runway. At this moment in time, we're getting some real good momentum based on that. And yeah. there's some good examples that I can provide to you. But we've got the momentum. We're not at terminal velocity quite yet, but the front tire's off the ground.
Yeah, okay.
Once you get that front tire off, you've got the confidence. And Chris will tell you that, you know, you're seeing where this can really sit in. And there are other parts of the world where we're a little bit further forward, where we have got sales, we have got traction. So that front wheel's off the ground. Once the whole plane's off the ground, then it's about how high, how fast, and where's the destination.
Yeah.
That's when you're talking about what the numbers are looking like. And that's when you go from an early adopter mentality, which is, I don't care which iPhone or which car, electric car, I'll have the first one that comes out.
Mm.
If it works or it doesn't work. And that early adopter marketplace has a limited percentage of customers. So you've got to run that limited adopter space along with trying to get the traction to get and open it out to the larger marketplace. And you can only do that by example, by referencing, by proving concept, and being the squeaky wheel, basically, that gets the oil. And the more you do that, as I've done with other products I've been associated with, over time it works. You just got to be persistent with it, especially when the technology has got so many legs. And this VTECs product absolutely has.
Okay.
It's got a great ESG platform for those companies that really have a problem with energy consumption and cost. Also, you know, energy is an expensive commodity. We all know that. I saw something from distance when I was back in Australia on the UK government, previous prime minister turned round and said, let's just turn the fridges off in the pubs. I think it was one of the London papers that said, prime minister said, let's turn the fridges off in the pub when the pub's closed. Because no one's in the pub, no one's going to have a drink, so why have the refrigerators on? Well, because in the morning it's going to take you 90 minutes to 2 hours to get them back up again. What we're saying with VTECs is that's the same scenario. This is not really working. 0.6 of a kilowatt is not energy consumption.
Yeah.
When it's not working, when you need it, it just goes into action. And it's still not using energy until it's not like opening a fridge where the compressor comes on and the hot air goes in and cold air is then required to be pumped around. So the more you use your fridge, the more your energy you're going to use. With this, we're just maintaining an ice block, which basically is the platform for us to chill the product. And until the ice block, which is also in an insulated container, starts to reduce, the compressor and the evaporator doesn't come on.
Okay.
So ultimately, you're not using any energy. So the unit can be working quite merrily, which is basically a motor which is making the rotation and the principle of how the product works. But fundamentally, you're not using that much energy.
Right.
So
okay, it's a great saving. So where does EnviroCool go from here? You know, you've got trials running with some major European, some interest in South Africa, Australia and things like that, and some glamorous places.
Yep.
Where do you see this going for?
I think it's a domino effect. We've got to, as we spread our wings around the world with our partners, who have also got relationships, who also have the foot in the door process to go and speak to some of these companies, show them the product, demonstrate it, and they say, that's quite smart. Let's have a trial. I mean, the best one we did was just shortly after October, and I can say this because it's all out in the air now, and they'd be happy for me to publicise it. In Italy, we launched the Mark II just during that that sort of week at the exhibition, we had various customers that we took out, and we used a company called Signovino. Now, Signovino are Italy's largest wine retailer.
Okay.
Of Italian wines. Each store generally holds around about 2,000 different bottles of wine.
Right.
They are a cucina, so they are a kitchen and a wine retailer. Mm-hmm. So you can go into their store, you can go and find a bottle of wine with your mate and sit down and have a lovely drink of whatever wine, Italian wine you want. And you can also have a bit of almost Italian tapas style. So okay. Arancini balls and just something to soak it up, yeah. and enjoy. So it's very social. Generally, the sites are in some grade A places, right next to the Ponte Vecchio in Florence, or in the Duomo in Milan, or down near the Colosseum in Rome. You know, really nice sites. Yeah. And I did a bit of research, as you do, and found out who owned the company, Italian billionaire. So I thought, well, I'm not going to get there. Hmm. But I did contact the MD. Mm-hmm. With the help of a bit of GPT, I put a bit of an Italian letter together and sent it off. And within 24 hours, he came back and said, we've been looking for something like this for a long time.
Wow.
Something that'll work. And I said, well, I think you found it. And within less than a month, we had a unit in their Milan store in the Duomo next to the cathedral.
Yeah.
And they said, look, we'll trial it over Christmas and let's see where it goes. Put some success criteria together. What do they want to see? We told them how much it was going to cost before they put their toe in the water. And they said, fantastic, that's great. And today we're rolling out with them.
Wow. Okay.
So what we've done basically is they had about 15% of the store wines, 2,000 that they could refrigerate. That's it. They didn't have enough, you know, you can't refrigerate the store. You can't refrigerate. Just can't do it. What we've done is Marco's, the training in wine manager for Signovino, will tell you that I can walk in the store now. I can chill anything. Anybody can have anything in my store. So even down to the, you know, your more expensive wines, you know, anybody can pick
the slow selling ones
off an ambient shelf and say, yes, I've been wanting that one. We'll have it and store it down. Now, if someone doesn't want it chilled, which is the big thing for retailers, is that they're saving 100% of energy because they haven't had it in a fridge for 24 hours or 48 hours or a week.
Yeah.
Chilling away, because every day that product's in the fridge, your gross profit margin of that product's going to come down.
Yeah, of course, because it's costing you money.
Because you're costing you money, but no one thinks about that. And there are, obviously, there's people in the organisation that will worry about that. It's usually your number crunchers that are in part, but the store manager's not necessarily going to worry about what their electricity bill is, but the group are.
Yeah.
And that's the balance of where we go and who we speak to. We need to make sure that the manager loves this product because it's going to give him, his customers, what they want, which is variety.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to serve, it's easy to use, and actually creates conversation. When you're going up to someone and saying, look, you know, yes, you picked this wine. Now, this wine manufacturer or wine producer says, you know, you should chill it to 8 or 9 degrees. I'm going to do that in the VTEX over there.
Yeah.
It starts conversation because you don't normally do that. You just take it out of a fridge and give it to someone.
Yeah.
Is it the right temperature? Well, it's been in the fridge, but is it the right temperature? Because when you look at the varieties around in the industry today, Chardonnays, Rieslings, the Champagnes, they're all different temperatures. All the winemakers tell you they prefer those
different temperatures.
And you've then got a customer. The customer says, well, I always have my Whispering Angel Rosé at 6 degrees because it's crisp and it's nice and warm outside and that's how I like it.
Mm.
That's fine, sir. I'll chill it to 6 degrees for you.
Yeah. So it gives people choices. And
absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, interesting times, and it's been a kind of masterclass in patience and strategy, I think. What I'm going to ask you, Paul, for you to hang on, hold the thought. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to ask Chris to come back into the studio and join us. And we're going to talk a bit more about the UK market and also some fun questions. So, thank you.
No problem.
If you're looking to make your commercial kitchen or hospitality operation more efficient, more sustainable and ready for the future, then you need to know about Zest Food Service Solutions. With over 40 years of industry expertise, Zest supplies premium equipment and innovative technologies that help professional kitchens perform at their very best. From hot holding and refrigeration to specialist food preparation solutions, they provide trusted equipment backed by expert knowledge and outstanding customer support. As a UK partner for Vitex, Zest is also bringing one of the most exciting innovations in beverage service to the hospitality industry. Using patented Vortex technology, Vitex rapidly chills drinks from ambient to the perfect serving temperature in just minutes, reducing refrigeration requirements, cutting energy consumption, freeing up valuable space, and ensuring every drink is served perfectly chilled. Whether you're planning a new kitchen, upgrading your operation, or looking for smarter, more sustainable solutions, Zest Food Service Solutions has the expertise and technology to help. To find out more, visit zestfoodservicesolutions.co.uk or v-tex.cool and discover how these innovative solutions can transform your operation.
So, Chris, welcome back, and Paul as well. Welcome back. We're still here in the Shudo and Kanae Wharf, of course. And we're going to talk a bit more about your partnership between Zest and Envirocool and the VTEC product in the UK, and actually how the partnership kind of came about, and you know, what you bring to the table, if you like. So, we're also going to do some fun questions as well. So, Paul, you mentioned earlier that it's quite difficult to find early adopters for this tech. You know, and also from your perspective, Chris, is it also hard to find distributors to adopt this tech? So just to hear that, really, what is that challenge?
Yeah, I suppose over time, you know, you gain relationships and you've got opportunities to put the product in front of people. And we're very lucky. We've got a fantastic investor set in Envirocool, and that opens doors. That's for sure opens doors. And it's done it in a number of places where we were today, over at the Conduit Club, where we've had a unit for a long time, where we can go and show people in a live environment what this is, how this is working and what benefits it has for the site.
I guess as soon as people see it, then they just go,
And you know, we showed the guys today the new Mark II, and they were, wow, this is fantastic. Okay. And got it straight away. They're also part of the Levy Group. So there's opportunities that will start to open up. It is that one domino down, and the next one goes, then the next one goes, and then it just carries on. So, but that's the process and the recipe for success, really. And, you know, I felt when I first got introduced to Chris that their mindset was the same. Mm. They understood the fact that this is not going to just suddenly click to 5,000 units overnight. It's going to take some really hard work. It's going to take some patience. It's going to take some door knocking. And unless you're prepared to go and knock on doors with products like this, give up, because you're never going to do it. It's if you want to go and sell the commodity things that are out there, a fryer, an oven, that's easy. And you know, sales guys are always saying, yeah, this it's easy because it's a least form of resistance of a sale. When it comes down to, well, I've got to talk a bit more about it, I've got to give you a bit more detail, technology, it becomes a little bit harder. But once it starts going, those dominoes start to knock down. And I think that's what I saw with Chris and their business, and that's what got me excited.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, rewinding back to when we met Paul and the product was, again, at Host last year.
Okay.
We went over there with a view to, you know, meeting some existing partners and also to keep an eye out for anything that we thought would fit with our portfolio. And through an industry colleague said to me, Chris, you want to go and have a look at that unit that's on the FCSI stand.
Right, okay.
Go down and have a look. And it was literally from there, the same thing, from an early adopter brain and an innovation idea and how this could also complement, you know, we do sell wine refrigeration, but also as an alternative when it comes to the space in people's kitchens or in people's bars, having a complementary product. And as Paul's saying, it's getting people to change their mindset. I link back to the whole gas versus induction.
Yeah.
You know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago when I was a chef, the chef comes early in the morning, lights up all the gas. It's burning away all day, burning energy, doesn't think about the cost. When the induction first came in, he was like, oh, no, I don't want that. I want my gas. And now induction is as responsive as gas. Yeah. It's a cleaner, you know, it's less extraction requirements. It's a cooler environment for people to work in. So this is a similar thing. It's understanding that you don't always have to do it how you've done it before.
Of course,
But it is getting, it's educating dealers, it's educating end users, it's educating consultants. And going back to the support we can provide, we have a demonstration unit. We know we've got a flight case. We can wheel it out. We can go and show people how it works.
Okay, and it's just on a 13-amp.
13-amp plug.
So it's easy. Yeah.
And again, if you...
off you go.
Yeah.
And if you, because of the ice bank, if we do unplug it and you take it somewhere and plug it back in, the ice bank is still there.
Oh, okay.
So again, you know, it's easily transportable to be able to do demonstrations. Okay. And for even for event spaces, when an end user, for example, was going to do some events, it can be moved around a venue to put to the place where required. So rather than having a fridge moved to an area, filling it up with bottles of champagne or bottles of beer, you could take cases of beer unopened on a trolley, have the VTEC next to it, and there you can serve.
Festivals, VIP areas.
Yeah, there's so many.
I mean, we've had a couple of, you know, event companies and other people coming in suggesting some of the horse racing Ascots. They might be bringing in
Wimbledon.
Storage refrigerator, you know, that they put all the stock in. The cost of that is significant. Yep. The energy that it takes is significant. Whereas you could literally, if you know how many you're going to go through, so if it's 40 an hour, then you're going to have a 2 or 3 VTECs and you've got 120 an hour. Yeah. Or, you know, you never only have one small fridge in the corner for an event. You have a number of them. What we're saying is that you could do this and scale it to the size of the event that you've got. So at the moment, this unit's going to produce you 450 cans an hour, or it's going to produce you 40 chilled bottles of wine or whatever an hour. If you want more than that, double it up.
But
you can add.
It's the change in the mentality. It goes back to the solid top stove. You know, the chef comes in the morning, has to light the solid top stove an hour and a half, 2 hours before he needs it, because that's what he does. And he knows that, and he does it, he accepts it. And it's the same with setting up for a function or an event with drinks. You know, 4 hours before, you're bringing staff in to fill up a fridge so that it can chill for 2 hours. And then once that fridge empties, you can't replenish. You've got to call back to the central fridge to get more stock.
Yeah.
It's little, but people do what they always do because that's what they know. And it's just making people stop and think, actually, there's a different way of doing this.
Hmm.
And this kind of product is that.
Yeah, and you know, I had an industry friend of mine that works for an enormous events and stadia company, who turned around and said, don't just think of the operational side, as in the service side of it. Think about the stocking side as well, because we all know in bars, the time you fill bars up are either really early in the morning or, guess what, late at night when no one wants to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, put the old stock at the front, bring the new stock at the back. It's labour cost at the end of the day. So if we turn around and said, all you need to do is have the stock there, you don't have to put it in the fridge, just put it there. So when the staff come in the morning and start serving you, you just chill.
Yeah.
Even if you want to stock your fridge, you can stock it chilled through a VTEX. If you've got, you know, if it's a complementary product, or VTEX is a complementary product to an existing refrigeration setup, and then, you know, over time, if the refrigerator breaks down or it needs replacing, you can then think about, what do I do in the future? Do I want to go fully 100% just with the VTEX and chill on demand? Or do I keep the balance of what I've got at the moment?
I've seen setups in event spaces, for example, where they've filled up fridges for an event. Then at the end of the event, because of security, they've had to break it back down again.
Yeah,
so they've chilled drinks for a few hours to not use them. Then they've put them back in a box and taken them back to an ambient space.
Yeah.
And when you think about that.
Contain it and put them back out in the morning.
And then the next day they go and set up another area and put the stuff back in to chill again. Yeah. And you just think about, but it because it's habit, and John comes in at 8 o'clock and does the fridges, that's what John does.
Mm. Yeah.
But they just don't realise that there's another way of doing it. And you're not chilling back to ambient, back to chill, back to ambient, just wasting time, wasting money. But it's that early adopter, getting, as Paul was saying earlier, getting the dominoes to fall and getting people to not to have time to go, well, if they're using it and they're seeing success, I want a piece of that.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And that's where we're getting to now.
And Paul, from your perspective, I asked Chris this before about, you know, sustainability. And I said to Chris about distributors, and we said, you know, end users kind of driving it. Do you think, is that the same worldwide? Are people looking at it now, not just about capital costs, they're looking at operational costs? It's not just energy, is it? In this case, it's labour, it's all sorts of different things.
It is. And, you know, even you know, we're again, it's out there in ether that we've got a couple of trials going in a couple of big named retailers, certainly with Auchan and Tesco's at the moment. And, you know, they're big operations. Their ESG goals are different than the local restaurant down here because of the scale of it. And when you can have, you can give the retailer the option of saying, well, don't have any refrigeration, take it away. Because it's an enormous cost. It's eye-watering.
Hmm.
And then say, give the choice to your customer. Yes, it's breaking a habit. It's a bit disruptive.
Hmm.
They may have to think they've got to do something different. And I said to someone the other day, I can remember, I don't know how long ago it is, certainly in Australia, I don't know in the UK, but when we had supermarkets with people on the tills, today we've got more self-service checkouts than we've got people on the tills. Now, when I certainly saw that, the first one I saw, people are just going to walk out with stuff. You know, it's going to be a nightmare. This is not going to last.
Yeah.
But imagine a sales guy that had to go to the supermarket to say, I'm going to give you some self-checkout tills and you're going to be able to reduce your staff costs.
Mm.
Not everybody would agree with that, but the fundamental is they needed to. That's a hard sell. It's disruptive. They said, let people do it themselves and pay themselves and hope that they paid and they don't walk out without paying. You know, all of those things are disruptive things. And I think when you look at VTEX in that environment, we're saying to them, look, the money you can save by not chilling, just have it as ambient.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, if you're going to save 100% of energy, because not everybody that walks into a supermarket wants it chilled.
No, of course.
Now, we've been talking this week about supermarkets in respect. In Australia, you know, it's there. You don't really have liquor in supermarkets. You have liquor stores next to supermarkets.
Yes, yeah.
However, it's come in and go out. And yes, there's age restrictions and we'll be able to manage it. Culturally, and you say, how does it work elsewhere in the world? And are things different? Yes, they are. Here, obviously, there's a few more challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Things are put in cages and locked and you don't see everything. And it's not as easy grab and go.
Yeah.
It's just the circumstances of, you know, where we are today.
Mm.
Australia isn't. You see it up on the shelf, you take it. But it's a process of saying ambient and give the choice. Does the customer want to take it away chilled or are they happy to take it away ambient?
Yeah.
If you take it away ambient, it's 100% energy saving. No one's spent any energy.
Yeah, of course. And if they want it chilled, they're going to have it chilled.
Absolutely. And as someone's saying, you know, we've got some test sites over in Australia where we're in liquor stores that there's some high net worth areas, more expensive areas, where people don't actually go in the store. They've actually got it on they'll do it on an app or a Uber Eats or something like that. But even now on that, the app will say, yeah, I'm going to this particular liquor store and I want my bottle of, you know, Whispering Angel or a bottle of champagne or whatever, and I'll actually have it delivered chilled. So that site can just go and chill it. Uber guy comes along and send it off chilled.
Yeah.
Or, no, I don't. No one's spent any money then. If it's not chilled, it's 100% saving. But if it's not, it's 3 minutes worth of a small amount of energy, not 24, 48 hours.
Yeah, of course.
I said to someone a while back, I said, it's like driving your car home at night, parking it in the garage and leaving the engine on just in case you want to go.
Mm.
That's the same as I've got a retail store with a load of refrigeration in it and it's on 24 hours a day and probably 9 hours of the day, 10 hours a day, it's not being used. And they're just burning energy for the sake of it. So that's where I think, you know, VTEX makes a real difference and it's going to take time, but those dominoes will fall over and it'll just keep going. And
if people want to find out more about it in the UK, where do they go or internationally as well?
So the good thing is obviously our head office is UK.
Okay.
We're a UK we're a British company, British technology, British invented. It's patented.
Oh,
so
well,
that's
okay.
one of the things which is good. You want to try and protect it where we can. So the replicators come along, they've got to think slightly differently. So for us, we're vocal.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we do things, you know, like we're doing, and, you know, the things that we get ourselves out with, partnering with the right companies like Zest, also helps us become a multiplier. I tell you, you tell someone else, and it just keeps going. And
yeah.
That domino effect is not just about sales. It's also about who's talking about the product, how much difference it can make, and you've got to do that. I mean, I've been a great proponent of being involved with the consultant fraternity globally, and I did the lunch last week with FCSI, and it was great because there was people that I hadn't seen 16 years,
yeah,
17
yeah.
years, and there's some people that are new, and we have to do those things. Though, you know, that's where the core of where the knowledge comes from. You've got to get away from this cookie cutter approach of it's a restaurant, so they'll have a gas and an oven and they're up that
yeah,
fridge
yeah, yeah.
or that fridge. We want to disrupt that. We want to say you've got an alternative, and you're, as a consultant, are being paid to provide your customer with some really good opportunities. And unless you know these things, you can't give it to them.
Yeah,
and
of course.
Then suddenly you say, I've got this product. I think not only it's going to save you a shed load of energy cost, but I think it's going to be fantastic for you in how you look at your wine list, your beer list, being able to provide someone with an unlimited range expansion because you've got a VTEX. That's got to be a good thing. That's got to be a tractor.
Yeah,
not
yeah,
only
yeah.
for your customers, but also for the guy that's selling you the wine. He's thinking, I'm going in now, and I think I can sell you all this wine. You don't have to have a, you know, 12 boxes of everything. You can have one box or whatever you want that you can store, but your range expansion's there. That increases sales, and you know, I think you just that's where it dominates from.
Definitely. Okay, so we're going to move on to a quick fire round, and we're going to try to keep it quick and short if we can. You're on death row. What's your dinner?
It's got to be roast beef Sunday lunch.
Love it.
100%.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it.
Great.
Me, it's it'll be a fish chowder. I think, you know, I love fish.
Okay, not a barbecue.
No, not prawns on the prawns on the barbie. Let's go. No, fish chowder for me.
One piece of equipment that you couldn't live without at home.
My Big Green Egg barbecue.
Right. Dark. Cool, love that.
I got to say too, I mean, Chris will get this. I still got my knives that I trained with, and I was very, very lucky recently when I was over in Japan to be sent over to a guy that makes the Japanese sashimi knives. I've always wanted a sashimi knife, and they're not cheap. I can absolutely not, but always wanted one. I've got one. It's razor sharp. Not that I can't do without. I'm pleased I've got one. But my original chef's knives, I think, are, you know, I love them. Just balance.
Mine's always dishwasher, to be honest. It's always on. It's always on. So, best meal you've ever eaten anywhere in the world? Difficult one.
I'm going to say too quickly. Longclume, Cartmel, right. Amazing 20-course tasting menu a few years ago.
20-course. Cool.
The first, wow. I think it was the first 8 courses you don't get cutlery.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Such a great experience. But also, I must give a quick shout out to my favourite restaurant in Guernsey when I was over there, which is the Nautique, Le Nautique, which is right on the front.
Right, okay.
Chef Gunter's had it for many years, and I can't remember a particular meal, but every time you go there, it's fantastic. And it's got a brilliant table view of the harbour. But I just love it. It was so classic, so nice.
Yeah. Paul, difficult because you travel all over the place. So.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I was going to be a bit more loyal to the country I live in. So, you know, I had the pleasure over time with relationships that I've had. And I was taken to this gentleman's restaurant a long time ago. And then I had another meal there, which was a wedding anniversary meal. And the chef is Mark Best. And his restaurant at the time in Sydney was called Mark.
Okay.
Marque. And if you could see his kitchen is about the same size as this room that we're doing this podcast
wow.
in.
Okay.
And what came out of that kitchen was just amazing. I think he's an extraordinarily talented chef. He's been in the industry a long time. I think he does a bit more advising these days. The mark is no longer there, unfortunately. But some of the things that he produced out of that kitchen was just mind-blowing. and yes, I've been very privileged to enjoy some meals all over the world, including a lot of in Asia. And I think there's some very, very talented people out there.
I put in here tea, coffee, or you can go beer, wine. Maybe start with morning and then evening, go to the coffee and then...
Coffee.
And then evening, if you're out on an industry event or something, a beer or wine or
do you know what? And this sounds bad, I'll drink anything. But what I mean by that is I like to drink for the environment.
Right, okay.
So a nice meal, if I've had a steak or a red wine, I like a sparkling wine. You know, I can be convinced to have a nice whiskey at the end of a meal. I appreciate it. And I appreciate the environment you're in to drink the right drink.
Yes.
Yeah, coffee in the morning, coffee in the afternoon, coffee in the evening. But again, I'd say what Chris has said. You know, those that know me, they know that I like a good gin and tonic.
Okay.
I love my gins. And that's my go-to. I'll drink, what's ever put in front of me to some extent, but I think the gin and tonic is my go-to at the end of the day.
Last couple. Most overrated food trend in the last decade?
Dubai chocolate.
Oh, I love Dubai chocolate, me. I love it. You're always buying it.
But it's like, my brother lives in the UAE and you go over there now and it's just the price of it.
I love it.
It's just a bit of pistachio chocolate, isn't it? I don't know. It's
where have we gone? I can't get it. Harrod's doing an amazing one.
Yeah. The other one I was going to say that my daughter won't thank me for is matcha. Don't get matcha either.
No, that's quite a new trend, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Look, for me, because I just simply don't get it, and I probably get a lot of people thinking about that. Bubble tea. What the hell's going on?
There's another one, love. Oh, you two bubble have just your men.
What is bubble tea?
No, I know what you mean. Yeah. I mean, but the matcha, I don't like the matcha either. It's full of caffeine. It's really bad for you.
When my daughter makes one at home, it just smells the whole house out. Mm. It's like, oh.
So if you weren't in the food service, you can go crazy with this, if you weren't in the food service equipment industry, what would you be doing? You'd be stupid, whatever.
No, I'll be really straight up. I was so into aeroplanes when I was a kid. I was in the air cadets and had a really, I was close to going into the RAF, and I was really into, I hoped I was going to sort of be like an engineer. So if you think about it, I'd have probably retired with a great pension by now, so I'd probably be retired. Because I would have probably done 30 years in the RAF, and now I'd be living somewhere else, relaxing in the world. But I think it would have been something to do with that. That was what I always wanted to do.
Okay. For me, I think I've got to go back to sort of my family roots. My father's in the building industry. My uncles were in the building industry. My one uncle was an eminent architect. So I think probably the building industry. In my sort of summer holidays, I would go down and work and do bits for one of my uncles who had a building firm in Bristol, and I just loved it. And I think probably I would have gone down that way, I would imagine.
Okay. And finally, a personal question, but describe your home kitchen in three words.
Traditional.
Yeah.
Equipped. Welcoming.
I like that.
Yeah, that's an interesting one because Australian kitchens are, I've got a very unusual kitchen with various bits and pieces in it. But yeah, I'd say modern is very clean.
Yeah.
But also very functional.
Okay. Well, that's it. End of the quick fire round. Fantastic. Some great answers there. It's been a pleasure to have both of you on the podcast. I hope you both enjoyed it.
Thank you. It's been really good.
Really good to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you after such a long time. Yeah. We keep in touch on LinkedIn. Yeah. A pleasure having Chris Bing from Zest Food Service Solutions and Paul Harper from EnviroCool VTech in the studio with me. Both bringing different perspectives on new technologies and disrupting markets. So yeah, fantastic to hear. So that concludes the episode of Kitchen Curiosity, and thank you to our sponsors, Zest Food Service Solutions. If you want to find out more about Zest, you can visit them on zestfoodservicesolutions.co.uk, or give them a call on 0800 246 5800. If you want to find out more about VTech, you can go to their quite fun website, which is v-tech.cool. Nice and simple. So thank you for tuning in, and hope you enjoyed this episode of Kitchen Curiosity. If you get a moment, please rate the podcast or leave us a comment. Until next time, stay curious. I've been your host, Radford Chancellor, and you've been listening to Kitchen Curiosity.
Kitchen Curiosity is written and hosted by Radford Chancellor and is edited and produced by Tom Anderson. Kitchen Curiosity is a Sound Rebel production.